had acquainted the Defense Department with them. I thought he was overly optimistic, but he proceeded. And the plan has come to naught, as the Chinese have decided that the DC-9 is an outmoded plane, a heavy consumer of fuel. And I guess they continue to look at the 727 with some interest, but they have not done anything really yet. Douglas was interested in getting ahead of Boeing, and then Boeing has caught up in the sense that neither have gone forward, and each are making some parts for their planes in China. Bresendine, of course, now is no longer with Douglas, is he? Or he? I think that's right.
Well, he got
in trouble.
He was indicted under bribery charges, I think. I don't know whatever happened to those.
Well, I feel bad when I think back on a couple firms. Douglas is one, Westinghouse another, RCA a third. All came to the White House and went to the State Department. And their corporate plans were clearly beyond what the traffic could bear. And I thought, and in retrospect, I think maybe I was wrong, I thought that an NSC staff person should not provide any counsel to American corporations, that one should answer their questions and give a political assessment and indicate the limitations of the Chinese, but not comment on the corporate plan itself. And I thought that I'd seen some plans that just were very harmful to corporate interest. Maybe I should have said something. I don't think it would have had much effect, but I feel, in rethinking my role, that I should have been more forthright.
Then in mid-October, we had a visit from the U.S. governor's delegation, a host for CPIFA.
That was a National Committee on U.S.-China Relations delegation.
Right.
Right. They had an Air Force plane, I think.
Yes. I think Bill Milliken was co-chairman.
Doak Barnett accompanied the delegation. That's right.
Right. Then I see on October 16th, I'm inspecting the Marine Guard quarters. We had finally negotiated with the Chinese the right to bring Marines back. And I guess they had, when the liaison office was first established in 73, we brought the Marines in routinely. I heard some horrendous stories about what they're supposed to have done. After all-night drinking parties, supposed to in full battle, full uniform, full battle fatigues, run down Chang'an, Satan, the Marines are back.
Oh, really? I haven't heard that one.
Anyway, the whole thing was so bad that Zhou Enlai told Dr. Kissinger that they had to be removed. We had a difficulty with the security personnel because it was state security. And essentially, these people stood watch. They had nothing much to do beyond that. And they were trained beyond the demands of the job, so that before my arrival, not while I was there, we had some difficulties in that regard. When we negotiated with the Chinese, it was on the basis that there would be no uniforms. And no arms outside the compound, I think.
No uniforms outside the building. They wear uniforms inside, don't they?
No.
No?
Huh. Not at that stage.
Uh-huh.
They were on duty in civilian clothes. When on the Marine birthday, because the first one we celebrated was 79, which came along soon after they had arrived, so the question of uniforms didn't come up. When the second birthday ball, birthday came around in 80, the Marines had been very careful in choosing the personnel to send. They had limited tours, but the ones they chose were really excellent. And the men came to me and said sort of wistfully, it would be awfully nice if they could wear their uniforms for the birthday celebration. And so I went to the Chinese and the foreign ministry, and I didn't ask them. I said, we are going to do this. Which of course gave them the opportunity to say, no, that's not in accordance with our agreement. They will not be outside the compound, and it will be only for this occasion, but we're going to do it. And they just listened and accepted the information without comment. The first year, 79, there was even some discussion as to whether I could, in my brief address, even say they were Marines. Say they were Marines. Which I did, of course, because it's kind of nonsensical to have a Marine birthday without saying they were Marines. But in 80, they wore their uniforms for the brief ceremony and for the reception that followed. The question of wearing the uniforms on duty inside the embassy was pushed very hard whenever the visiting officer would come. He'd always raise this question. Chinese, up until the time I left, were pretty adamant on the question. Governor Milliken also had a Michigan metalworking delegation that was there at the same time that he was there with the governor's group. But we gave a banquet for them.
Was his wife with him on that trip? She has.
I don't think so.
Because she has such a keen China interest.
No, I don't think she was there. And they all met with, all the governors met with the Deng Xiaoping. Of course, he had met with quite a few of them at that gathering in Atlanta when there were 17 present during his state visit. And the American Express group came for breakfast. That was Jim Robinson, their chairman, was with them. And they had big plans for their operation in China. Then I see going with Harry Hobbs, who was our administrator. Counselor to the director of the Diplomatic Services Bureau, Gua Ying. This was on the question of housing and buildings. And I don't know how many meetings I had on this. DSB would say, in effect, we are sympathetic, we want to do it. Problem is with the foreign ministry. The foreign ministry would say, no, we're doing all we can. It's the DSB.
And could you never get them in the same room together?
No. I remember on one occasion I went over to the DSB and Guo followed me out to the car. Left his interpreter behind, and stuck his head in the window to say, put the pressure on the foreign ministry. So that he said it in a low tone so that only whoever was with me and he knew what he was saying. You remember, we were supposed to have rented the embassy that was built for the
Albanians. And we lost it by not coming back quickly enough, didn't we? But the Chinese were too quick, too.
We were slow. But they remember they told us on the morning that the vice president's party was to leave for Xi'an. They came out and told us at the airport that they had sold that building. They sold it to the Iraqis. Selling it means a 60-year lease or whatever. Supposedly, they paid several million dollars for it. It was strictly the money deal. So then we dropped back and started to bargain for the Iraqi compound that they were going to give up when they moved into the former Albanian embassy.
I didn't know that it was done at the airport as the vice president was leaving. That's horrible. So that they knew it presumably earlier and didn't wish to mar his trip.
Mr. Xi, I think, is the one who told me.
Huh.
And
where was that decision made, do you think?
Well, in these meetings, I kept saying, look, I have Deng Xiaoping's personal assurance that this problem will be taken care of. And it got to the point where Mr. Guo, in particular, at DSB, would say, we know that. We know that. But there's nothing can be done on the Iraqi compound. Buildings were not in too good condition, but those could be fixed up. But there was a fair amount of ground. What we had in mind was to bring in house trailers. And we figured we could have gotten the equivalent of the 13 or 17 apartments, I forget the number, but at least 13, possibly 17. Then, of course, the Chinese had the problem. There were certain embassies that had no site at all. Operating their embassies out of the hotel. The Irish Republic was one. And, of course, they only had three or four people. But nevertheless, they didn't have an embassy. So Mr. Guo, in one of my meetings, let's split it. You take one half. And it wasn't the Irish at this point, it was someone else. They'll take the other half. Well, that was of no use to us because we were involved more with the notion of the land area that we could bring these house trailers in. And FBO had said that they'd fly them in, we could get them almost immediately. We had a very bad housing problem with so many people in the hotel. But then when we turned down the splitting, they then offered it to whoever was next in line. We turned it down, but even then we didn't get it. The Irish finally took it.
I want to come back to the Albanian offer, because that would have been obviously the ideal solution, wouldn't it, in your view?
It would have been a good solution for office space. It would have done nothing for the housing.
Right.
Except there were certain areas.
But that's one of those huge compounds, isn't it?
Yes, but what had been designed as a residence was very badly designed. But with some changes, could have been a good marine house, for example, mm-hmm. which would have freed up a couple of apartments at least, maybe three. But it would not have done much for housing, but it would have solved our office problem.
for a considerable time because of the size of the compound. But I want to come back to this. Do you think in the Chinese mind that there was a link between the Twin Oaks and what they perceived was less than wrongly perceived as less than expeditious behavior on our part with the way they have handled our space?
They never so indicated. It's possible.
But you never had any intimation of that?
No, and I think had that been any kind of factor of any consequence, they would have communicated that in some fashion, but they didn't. No, their general attitude was very sympathetic, and in these discussions that I had, particularly those on the side, they admitted it was a political problem for them too.
But the we never could identify precisely then where the political problem was.
In this way, after normalization, you know, all the other, not all, but many of the other embassies were watching the Americans very closely to see what they were going to get, because everybody had problems. And we did get a great deal, as against others, because there were so many more of us. You know, when you count the journalists and the increasing number of businessmen, all of whom were the Americans as far as the diplomatic community was concerned. Political, not in the sense of factional politics in China, but political in their relationship with the diplomatic community generally.
But now, could you compare how we fared to how the Japanese fared?
Well, the Japanese had a very crowded embassy, but they were not expanding particularly at that time. They had a separate residence. They had a very much better residence than we had, but they'd had that almost, I guess, from the time they established relations in 72.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because I wondered whether this was just the political, or whether it wasn't this linkage, or another possibility that went racing through my mind, is that maybe it reflected a reluctance on the part of some, hard to identify, to really totally institutionalize the relationship. That's a big building, a big lot symbolizes. It becomes a high-profile kind of relationship. And in spite of all the warmth in the relationship at that time, I wondered whether it didn't somehow reflect, well, maybe some second thoughts as to...
Of course, they had given us in March of 78 the former Romanian trade mission, which was of sizable and of considerable use to us. And then this crisis was solved as far as office space was concerned by telling us that we would get the Pakistani embassy and grounds at the point they moved into their new quarters, which didn't happen until the end of 1980. And they're still being remodeled. The school is occupying. This was particularly attractive to us because it was a Pakistani school, so there were school quarters which without too much remodeling could accommodate a much bigger school than we had had. The school is occupied, but the rest, I got a note from Chas Freeman just the other day in which he said they hope now to move into the spring. I gather that's next spring. Well, that seems an ungodly long time, even for China. Maybe this spring.
Well, if the Albanian had been obtained, then the Pakistani would not have been necessary. Isn't that right? We would have...
As a matter of fact, had the Albanian been obtained,
given up
the question was, the Pakistani would not have come into the picture. question was whether the Chinese would require us to relinquish the former Romanian trade mission. Although we were insistent, we needed all three.
Of course, the huge unused compound now is the Vietnamese. That's a huge operation there. Deserted, except for all the electronic gear.
AT&T dinner in the Great Hall. AT&T, they had been in. They were there to counsel with the Chinese on their long line system, I think, right? And they had AT&T had a meeting with Deng Xiaoping in the hall on the 23rd of October.
We ought to carefully chart up the number of times that you saw Deng Xiaoping. An incredible number of times, isn't it?
Yes. I can do that.
Did you see him so often that you almost felt that you knew how he was feeling that day and whether he had something else on his mind?
To some degree. You know, not with such assurance that I would have bet the family jewels on it, but to some degree.
Was he fairly steady, or was he erratic?
No, he was pretty steady.
And did you feel that he was using these occasions, or was it ritualistic for him? For the
it would
part?
Be both. But he was never condescending to people. He put his best foot forward for practically everybody. Mm. But he did use some of them for particular purposes. Then we had a reception for the People's Republic of China's Central Broadcasting Delegation, about 30 who were going to the United States.
I met with them on the Washington.
They were guests of ICA, I guess, or BOA. Secretary Anderson, that would be the woman from the Treasury.
I'd lost all count at this point. I read about it in the newspaper.
Yeah, Treasury Undersecretary. On the 30th of October, the State Economic Commission delegation was going to the United States. And they asked for a briefing, and they came over to the residence and gave them a briefing, and we had a lot of questions. It lasted 2.5 hours.
This was Yuan Baohua, was the head of it, I believe, or close to the head.
Right.
And you know that it also had Deng Lijun, who is now the head of who in summer 82 became the head of the party propaganda department, one of the closest brain trusters have done. It was a very important delegation.
Yes, and they were very sharp, very sharp. Questions about monetary policies, budgetary policies, and administrative matters. And the meeting broke up. I went to the doorway to see them off, and I left a pile of my papers at the head of the table where I was sitting. And I forgot them. And Mr. Wong, they were in there clearing up, saw these, and also a briefcase that the Chinese had left. But the briefcase was very close to where my pile of papers, and he thought this was mine too. And so he takes my papers on top of the briefcase and brings them all out. hands them to me, assuming they're all mine. Sharon was with me when he'd gone away. I looked and I said, "Well, this isn't my briefcase." So I take the pile up front and the briefcase, as I remember it, to the receptionist to say, "This Chinese left this, and someone will be coming back to pick it up." I don't know who it was, came to get the briefcase. They took it back to the economic section. Then they took all the contents out, leaving the briefcase on the desk, empty, and take the contents to duplicate them some distance away. In the meantime, the Chinese come back with their briefcase and, of course, go to the residence where the meeting had been. And Sharon said, "Oh, I took that briefcase up front." So she goes to the receptionist and to come for the briefcase. So the receptionist or somebody goes back and brings the briefcase empty. Gave it to the Chinese. And they just took it. There was a document in there which, minutes of a meeting involving Deng Xiaoping, not a current one, of some time past. Interesting, but not a great moment. The Chinese never said boo about it. The fact that the contents were not in that briefcase. Of course, we raised Cain with whoever was so stupid as to take the contents away from the briefcase, knowing that the chances of their coming back with the briefcase very quickly were extremely high. We never had another request for a briefcase.
What, Leonard, what do you do when you get angry in a case like that?
Well, I was upset more than angry. I don't think I was even aware of who did it. I was assured whoever did it was duly reproved, but everybody was so abject.
Having their hand caught in the cookie jar. but what were your instructions as a result? I mean, that was mishandled, or that they should not have bothered to take the stuff out?
I was inclined that it shouldn't have been done. The gain, it would be no priceless document brought onto our premises in any event, and the gain was not likely to be greater than the risk involved. But then the stupidity on top of it, I'm afraid the stupidity sort of became the thing rather than should it have happened or not happened.
Well, I've often wondered what the Chinese practice. There's no question about the Chinese bugging buildings in their efforts. But I've often wondered when they came into to my building, to the old executive office building, we always had them followed or escorted, never to be out of anyone's sight. I always felt that was excessive zeal. I didn't challenge it, probably. That's part of security procedures, and one accepts it. I always felt the Chinese would never make use of an opportunity like that.
I'm inclined to that point of view.
That they have the sense of what's the big thing and what's the little thing.
Yeah. That day was also the first day that I met the model bakery team. did we ever conclude the building of the model bakery?
Oh, yes, it's working.
Do they make Wonder Bread?
Well, they're making bread. It's not packaged as Wonder Bread, I don't think.
A typical store-bought bread?
No, because it's a harder bread so that it's easier for slicing. It isn't sold in already sliced. But, oh, yes, that's in operation.
And then the reception for the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences delegation that was going to the U.S.
Now, that's the one that went to the Williamsburg Conference.
Right.
That would have been that time of the year, no doubt. Leonard, do I detect that you didn't come back this October for the UN, or does that come up in a little while?
Apparently I didn't.
Did you not come back for the fall?
I came back for the briefings in connection with the Brown visit.
Uh-huh.
In December.
Was that your choice not to come back? You had said earlier that you sensed the political situation was difficult.
I think Wang Hua did not go to the UN.
Uh-huh.
I think that's why I didn't go.
Yeah. And there was no secretary's meeting. That's right. Vance did not meet with any. I don't think I went up to New York anyway for any meeting. This was an very, very busy time for me. I was busy every day on this special thing. And you had known about, had you received a special briefing?